You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you are with me today on Dr. Michelle Live. 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. We're walking this road together. You can also email me, DM live, breadboxmedia.com. You can text, which is very cool as well. So today it's going to be fun. It's Friday. We're actually starting off on a new journey we started yesterday, didn't we? We started looking at that book that I want to go into because I think what a wonderful template that we can just like discover together. Riding the Dragon, 10 Lessons for Inner Strength in Challenging Times. So it's like, if that's cool for me, I figure that's going to be cool for you too. So, and will I actually start from the beginning to the end? Probably not, even though it's a very small book. So it's very well written and very concise, so I think you'd all like it, by Robert J. Wicks, W-I-C-K-S. He is quite the guy. I was introduced to him by actually listening to Alison Gingras in A Seeking Heart, and she did a book, I can't remember which book she did, but she did one of his books. And so I thought, wow, I like that. And so I got online and just whichever one of his gave me some interest, I went ahead and got. So I've got Spiritual Resilience and Riding the Dragon and a couple of others from him as well. So we're going to go into that. And we also are hearing from a longtime listener who asked some questions a year ago, I think, maybe longer than that, a long time ago, and then just popped up out of the blue with a dream that she had last night. So we are going to look at that dream because she asked about that dream. And you know, it was funny because the dream reminded her a little bit of the topic that we had from yesterday. So which comes first, the chicken or the egg? Does the word or this, the little match ignite something from the subconscious? Something, of course, we know that the answer is yes, it does. So that we bring it to the conscious. Dreams are, as Freud did say, and so did Carl Jung and a lot of dream interpreters throughout the ages. And of course, we look at dreams and don't get hung up on our little 2016 box world. The angel Gabriel came to Joseph in a dream. The Old Testament is filled with people being talked to in dreams. Dreams are, as Freud put it, in layman's terms and also in secular terms, and we can get all crazy about them, but I think it was he or Carl Jung who said, dreams are supremely egotistical. And what he meant by that is that the dreams are for and of and about the dreamer. So you may have, and dreams can be, and you know the difference in qualities if you are ever the kind of person or ever have had, whether it's premonitions, whether it's just a strong feeling about something, whatever it is, and you have been confirmed or not confirmed in a dream, that's a different story. Or some people have actually revisited their birth in a dream that they knew. Their words are go something like this, and see if this resonates with you. You know when you're dreaming and you know it's a dream, and then you have something else that you just know isn't a dream, and for you it's incredibly significant and has a different quality to it. That's usually some kind of variation. When you get a tip off that this is a very significant thing that you maybe even with your guardian angel are trying to tell you. Now, sometimes we have our big fear-based dreams. We have our dreams in the food for sitcoms, the food for stand-up comedians, when somebody has a dream about their spouse. And it's so real to them, they are angry when they wake up, and they won't let the spouse off the hook that, no, I dreamed it. It was so real. It must be real. This is really happening. Sometimes, maybe it could be, but a lot of times it's the own natural fear, the instability the person's feeling within themselves at that time. And it can be very symbolic. And we can go into show after show after show about the symbolism of dreams, because interestingly, for me, I find it interesting that it's very universal. No matter where you are, no matter where, who, what culture you come from, no matter which symbol you use, it's very universal. Shortly before my brother died, he had a dream, and this is when he was doing quite well, and no one expected him to die within short order at all. And he had a dream of, and for him, it was his particular spin on how he would see the station and the train and all that. But he had a particular dream. And that dream was that he was at the train station, this beautiful Art Deco train station. And he could describe it in quite fine detail with beautiful soaring glass and just gorgeous. And this train, he had all his bags packed. He was all ready to go. And he was at the train. He was there. He was excitingly anticipating this train, and the train pulled up, slowed down, and passed him by. And when I knew that it's a universal dream, the train taking you home, taking you to your destination, your spiritual destination. And oftentimes people before their deaths will have that kind of dream. Now, if you go home and dream about that tonight, it could be because we're talking about it. So don't let that worry you. This is not something that you think, oh, I'm probably going to dream about this. And he really didn't have a clue as to what that was saying to him. However, as I looked in retrospect, it was not very long after that, and he kept having train dreams, a few of them anyway, and among other dreams as well. And it wasn't very long after that that he actually, through much of happenstance, really, not all of it was a natural course of things. A lot of it was a unfortunate comedy of errors, although it wasn't very comedy. And he did die within not too long after that, within several months. And unexpectedly, even though it was, you know, he was, those of you have heard that story before, so I'm not going to go into that now because I want to get onto this book. But yes, it was expected that he probably would be dying at some point within a year or so of that time, but no one thought it would be as soon as it was, and there really were a lot of medical errors that occurred. So these aren't coincidences. So I want to read to you this kind of cool little dream that our listener had. I want to go into Riding the Dragon. We started off, it came with some pretty awesome thoughts yesterday, spurred on by Robert J. Wicks and Benjamin Hoff from The Day of Piglet. These things are all give us little clues. There are little nuggets. We always like to bring in, obviously, scripture quotes when they're pertinent. So we're going to do all that today and more. And you're welcome to weigh in and chime in and share a dream or two or ask some questions. 573-4-BREAD-4. And you can text. You can just text. We don't keep your information and we don't track you. So know that. You can also email dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. Now, before the break, we will read Emily's question. She said we could read it on the air. We only have a few minutes, so we'll read the dream and the question. And when we come back, we're going to start on our 10 steps for inner strength, and we will also be looking at Emily's dream and for some interpretation as we go on. So here it is. I think we've got time. Dear Dr. Michelle, I had a strange dream last night, which reminded me a little of your topic from yesterday about feeling like a nobody. I was walking home from somewhere and couldn't find my house. I met up with my daughter and a friend and we walked all around a neighborhood and couldn't find the house. We used a map. We couldn't find it. We used GPS. Still, we're lost. When I reached a building that looked like my house from afar, it turned out to be a church when we got closer. There were some other twists and turns in the dream that were too weird to go into right now. But when I woke up, I was still in a sleepy haze wondering if I ever found my house or why I couldn't find it. Any thoughts on what my subconscious is working on? Emily. Well, certainly, yes, there are thoughts. There are thoughts. And we're going to go into that, too. And we're going to use a little help from our friend Robert J. Wicks and Benjamin Hoff and scriptural quotes. This is, if you first remember, the dream is supremely egotistical. This dream is you, about you, for you. The symbolism is very universal, as I was saying before, like the train. And if you live in an area where there are no such things as trains, you will have something very similar. So let's say you live in a extremely impoverished area in the middle of a continent where you just have a tribal way of life and there's no such thing as a train where you are, you could have dreams of something else, a caravan, perhaps it's walking with several people, depending on how you might carry your goods or your cargo, but it's going to be very much the same kind of dream. Just as we find that universally in people who have, let's say, schizophrenia, universally the hallucinations oftentimes are actually having to do with divinities and the divine. So just like we have here, the cliche that we pick up on all the time, the person who thinks they're Jesus or the person who thinks they're Mary, we have very similar things all throughout the world. Why is that? Well, we'll ask that question on the other side of the break. You're welcome to text or call. Dr. Michelle, see you on the other side.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you're with me on Dr. Michelle Live. Walk on this road together, 573-4BREAD-4. Please, you're welcome to text. You're also welcome to email anytime. Let's see. Oh, yes, DM live at breadboxmedia.com. You can log on to breadboxmedia.podbean.com and hear what we talked about yesterday and look at previous podcasts. Those topics are always topical. They just are. That's what our minds, and we only do so many things. As I was saying before the break, our dreams are only so many subject matters, and so they're very universal, even though we might have to substitute a caravan of sled dogs for a train, we still have the same themes, and we find the same thing in schizophrenia as well sometimes, the same kinds of hallucinations. I still have this cold, by the way, so thank you for being patient. The same kinds of hallucinations. They're just the same themes of hallucinations. It's something that we're just amazingly interesting creatures. It never ceases to amaze me, God's amazing gift that He gives us in being and in the many little ways that we can have access to truth of ourselves. And sometimes these dreams, and Emily, we're going to get into your dream for sure. So if you're listening, don't give up. We will get into your dream specifically. Sometimes these dreams, though, they take these ongoing themes and they keep, it's us trying to alert us. And sometimes it's us telling us we are developing into the next step of our lives, but sometimes it's telling us the truth we don't want to see. Now, Emily, I'm not saying that's what's happening with your dream, but since we're on the topic of dreams, I want to give you an example. Another very common theme in husband and wife relationships is a theme where one of them, and I have to say most often, and probably because most often women take more advantage of talking about themselves and of dreams and also of figuring things out. And they're the ones who seem to want to sign up for therapy most often. They want to know. They're more ethereal in their desires to understand. Men oftentimes are just more linear and black and white. Sometimes, of course, not all the time. So another theme that I hear a lot all throughout is where the spouse is driving. Now, we'll just say right now, for purposes of illustration, that it's the wife who's dreaming. So the husband is driving and she's feeling more and more frightened in the car. She's feeling like her dream might find that they are going on these switchbacks, these hairpin turns, going up a mountain, and husband is distracted and looking off to the side, or not paying attention, or not looking at her and laughing and talking as if there's not a care in the world. She's being acutely aware that they're careening very close to a cliff or an edge. Or they find that she's trying to say, look, we're not going in the right direction, and he's kind of shining her on, and she's getting more and more upset and scared. He's more and more oblivious, and come to find out they are completely lost. So that's a common theme that I hear a lot. I know one young woman who describes it as laughingly as her end of the world dreams with her husband. She says, I'm having another one of those end of the world dreams with my husband. And it's always the same thing. Like, he's completely oblivious as the world is just shattering down around him, whether it's like a hurricane that's coming, a tsunami that's coming, they're in the car and they're going the wrong way. Well, what is that saying? It's saying that he's emanated something, some unavailability to her that she's picking up, and it is causing her to have some kind of insecurity. Now, it's also, as you dive deeper, because it's for her to truly know. When I give an interpretation of a dream, it is for her to completely know. I give possibilities. She's the one, because it's always, if you look at and you study these things, there's always, let's say, a door. Well, a door could mean so many different things. It depends on the kind, the shape, what's it feels like supremely to the dreamer. Is it eagerly awaited? Is it fearful? Is it awesome? Is it big, little? Is it something that could be in a house from your past and that's really why it's there? Could it be? There's so many different things, from the most basic Freudian concept to the most ethereal, angelic concept. So a lot of it is you give these possibilities, and it's up for the dreamer to feel that sense of peace inside as you hit on one of them. The dreamer has to go, you know, yeah. Now, sometimes they don't want to see. They don't want to see. And that's why they keep having these dreams. Or sometimes you have a repetitive dream, because it is your, have you ever had that recurring dream? Some people have them. They remember them from being 4 and 5 years old. For years, they will have a repetitive dream that they're somehow being carried away or they're being taken away. And a lot of that is that insecurity. They are sensing a huge destabilizing force within the family, or within their own life, or within their mother's life or their father's life, that they're picking up on. That's their little innocent intuition, be as little children, but they don't know where to put it. So all it does is cause them fear and instability. And sometimes they come to find years later that one of their parents was falling in love with somebody else and end up running off. Now, is that exactly what happened? You'll never know. However, that's the nature of dreams. They are sometimes very concrete, but their symbolism is there for you. It's a way that we deal with things without having to face them consciously. And something inside of you is churning, trying to write that dissonant chord. Remember, I talked to you about cognitive dissonance. Cognitive dissonance is where you're tooling along and you're hearing one thing and you're reading one thing. I mean, we do this all the time with the news. And then we just go, what? You know, we take this little double, or we hear this like something doesn't ring true. It basically is like a dissonant chord. It's like a chord that has one little part off that's kind of like, ugh, you know, you want to just like take that guitar and tune it up for somebody because you're almost there on the G chord, but something's a little off here. Well, cognitive dissonance is what gets instilled in us, as we talked about yesterday, to cause confusion. It is a method of control, even, where it's just enough where the truth, throw in something that throws it all off kilter, and you will just naturally take over for whoever it is that is doing that, or the, ever the situation. It's a very good tool that we have. That's how we get discoveries. That's how we learn the next step in our whole global life in the history of man, is that, yeah, that's all good. I get that. Sure. Yeah. But, you know, there's something not quite right with this picture. And so you get the Isaac Newtons and you get the Einsteins and you get the people that figure out that maybe leeches aren't the best medicine in the world. And then later you find out, yeah, but, you know, maybe they had something. Where's that little dissonant chord? What did we do wrong there, and what did we do wrong here? Or the people that, as we talked about yesterday a little bit, the things that people did for health reasons that turned out to be a disaster, like irradiating water. They really did. I've seen it at Living History Farms in Iowa. I've seen those little jugs made back in pioneer days, or whenever, maybe it was the 30s. I think it was the 30s, where they had like a lightning bolt on the jug and they put radioactive water on their hearth because it was supposed to be medicinal. Well, it was actually killing people, but they didn't know that then. So it took a while for people to put all those little pieces of the puzzle together. And then, but somebody had to have a little, oh, this doesn't pan out right. I know they're saying this over here, but man, if I open my eyes up over here, I'm seeing a little bit different picture. Could there be a connection? So that's all we ask in our dreams. Could there be a connection? Could there be a connection between what Emily is seeing, which we will read on our next segment, and things that are going on in her life? And it is oftentimes both and, all the above. Could she be feeling a nudging in her own household, in her own situation? Perhaps it is on the shakeup of her family. Maybe she's got some important things going on, children graduating to other classes or going into a different kind of world. Maybe there's ongoing problems within the marriage, perhaps where she had been hanging her hat, her motherhood. Maybe it's changing up a bit. Maybe there's a change going on. Maybe somebody's graduating. That's a possibility. Emily will know that, and she may not want to know. She may go, no, that's not it. And maybe it isn't. But after she ponders, it may open up. It also may be opening up, interesting that she thought something was her house and she went there, but it turned out to be a church. So I'd like to know what those other twists and turns were in the dream, because that's probably very significant. Now, I want to say another thing before we go into that on the other side of the break about dreams for your own information, your own interpretation of dreams. Pay attention to everything. What were the colors around? What was a person wearing? Was there a certain pattern in it? Sometimes people have dreams of an insignificant person in the dream, and they're wearing, let's say, a calico dress. And that actually is significant because it is very reminiscent, or maybe even exactly, if they sat back and reflected for a second, like the curtains, the calico curtains that were hung in their room when they were 3 and 4. And that leads you to that period of time where you might have a little bit of a nagging conundrum that stayed with you all your life that you need to figure out. And as you're uncovering roots in your life, these kinds of dreams do come up. Well, I am Dr. Michelle, and we'll see you on the other side of the break.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome back. I am Dr. Michelle, your host. You're walking with me on Dr. Michelle Live. We're walking it together. You are teaching me every step of the way, as I hope sometimes I teach you as well. 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. And you can text any old time. You can call. You can weigh in, you can share. That is like the awesomest thing you can do. I've mentioned so many times, that's our calling. We're called to do that. We have to be there for each other. That's just the way it is. You cannot just hold it in. Everywhere from Ecclesiasticus, Proverbs, Psalms, all the way up through the Gospels, you have to be there for each other. What does St. Paul say in a lot of his letters? Be there for each other. Please do that. Don't not be. You've got to be there for each other. Other than that, we are sunk. We are lost. So we're talking about dreams. I am going to get into riding the dragon, and I hope to do that today. If not, we'll start on Monday to continue. We started with our first chapter yesterday, but we got this little note from Emily about her dream after we began speaking about feeling like we are nobody. As my little son said, no man in the middle of nowhere. So we want to soften our souls up a little bit and take a look and say, what kind of direction are we going in? What are these little, these things telling us, the ones that are so obvious and the ones that aren't so obvious? Why do we need other people to help us interpret our dreams? Well, you know, we can listen to all kinds of stuff. And if we're going, yeah, maybe this, maybe that, that's a good one. But if you speak it, you will start putting it out there a little bit, and you will be able to hear it in your own words. We said yesterday, you can't not hear your own words. And sometimes I'm on the air and I'm hearing my own words and thinking, oh my gosh, do you not remember grammar? I mean, you do, and then I start thinking, you know, look, it helps you to just take a look at yourself and realize that sometimes when you think you are on a road to something, how easily distracted you can get. And then you miss your words and you stumble on your words, or you use the wrong grammar and you get hung up on that, or you start chastising yourself for that, or thinking you're not so good. You know, it's like, these are all learning experiences we just kind of take for granted. And then we get kind of flustered and upset when we, what we think is messing up. So I want to keep looking at this book, as I told you, because I think this is our pathway. And it already worked. It already is our pathway. Because as we were reading about pruning yesterday, we started off our entire topic with when you feel like a nobody. Or do you ever feel like a nobody? And evidently that kind of got Emily thinking somewhere, and without actually even meaning or intending to go home and ponder it, she had a dream. And that dream was all about being a nobody in the middle of nowhere, because it was about not finding her way home in neighborhood after neighborhood. We're going to go into it specifically. And she also took this time, and Emily, I will let you, because evidently you are listening, so I will let you have time to ponder a few more things as well, because she added a few more things too that she decided to put in there. So, and those are always good clues. They're always good clues. So before I do that, I'm going to go back to an author and a book that I've used here and there from Barbara Hosbach, H-O-S-B-A-C-H. The book is Your Faith Has Made You Well, Jesus Heals in the New Testament. And she did a really cool thing. She took several gospels, several places in the New Testament where Jesus is healing people. And she's taking it up to, it's almost like a little workbook. She talks about it. She gives her thoughts about it. And about the healing and how we can use that in our own life. And then she gives you, the reader, points to ponder at the end, and then she has a prayer. So in this particular chapter, this is chapter 16, The Blind Man at Bethesda. clearing our field of vision. And this is going to be very pertinent for you, Emily. And before we go into, it'll help tune us up before we go into the dream, which will probably be the bulk of next section. They came to, this is from Mark 8:22-26. They came to Bethsaida. Some people brought a blind man to Jesus and begged him to touch him. He took the blind man by the hand and led him out of the village. And when he had put saliva on the ground and laid his hands on him, he asked him, "Can you see anything?" And the man looked up and said, "I can see people, but they look like trees walking." Then Jesus laid his hands on his eyes again and looked intently, and his sight was restored, and he saw everything clearly. Then Jesus sent him away to his home, saying, "Do not even go into the village." Now, this is Barbara Hosbach's take, and I just, she's great. Well, everybody I'm reading to you, I think, is great, or else I wouldn't be reading it to you, reading them to you. The people begged Jesus to touch the blind man. Jesus did so much more. So, those who brought the man to Jesus probably led him by the hand. Jesus took him by the hand and led him out of the village. At that point, he no longer had his loved ones to lead him. He had to depend solely on Jesus. What did that feel like? Was the blind man relieved that he had been handed over to the care of someone who had healing power? Or was he scared to have only a stranger as his guide? Either way, he had little choice. To stay with his familiar support group meant reconciling himself to the status quo. I've heard that if a drowning man is panicky, the lifeguard sometimes has to render him even more helpless in order to save him. Only when the victim has no alternative but to rely on the lifeguard can he be saved. Perhaps that's why Jesus had to get the man off by himself, to ensure complete dependence on Jesus alone, with no option but to surrender. Jesus put saliva on the man's eyes and laid hands on him. This probably reassured the man. And I just lost my place. This probably reassured the man because saliva was a commonly accepted treatment in the culture. Her next section, once is not enough. After laying his hands on the man, Jesus asked if he could see anything. Jesus didn't usually ask the people he healed if the healing had taken effect. He commanded and it was done. "Be opened," and the deaf mute heard and spoke. "Pick up your mat and go home," and the lame man walked. This man was different. "Can you see anything?" Jesus asked. Chances are Jesus didn't doubt his own power. Although some healing did occur, perhaps Jesus sensed something blocking this man's receptivity. So take that sentence now, Emily, and all of us listening. Although some healing did occur, perhaps Jesus sensed something was blocking the man's receptivity. The man said he saw people, but they looked like trees walking around. Perhaps he had been blind since birth. In that case, how would he know what he was seeing? Maybe that was the problem. Having never seen people before, he may have had a different expectation of what they looked like. Maybe reality didn't fit in with his preconception. Now take that word, those words, Emily, and all of us. Maybe reality didn't fit with his preconception. In any event, Jesus was not content to leave a job half done. He laid his hands on the man's eyes again. This time, now, I want to stop here for 1 second and for Emily and dream interpretation and all that and just say, look, this is the point with having dreams and having people run into you that day and having listening to Dr. Michelle and letting it spur something in you. Even if you don't think, oh, I don't feel like a nobody. I've got all kinds of somebodies going around in my life. I'm, you know, a mom and a wife and I have a job and I do this and I do that. So something there, though, is going, okay, I'm seeing this world. And this is my conception of it and my preconception, but evidently I'm at a crossroads in my life where God and angels and the spiritual, the non-corporeal, the non-vocal, the non-physical vocal cord person standing in front of you is saying in every way God can ever say to you, including your dreams, well, maybe we need to open your eyes. Maybe you need to be a little, maybe there's something blocking your receptivity to what is true, what the truth is in your life. So this time the man looked intently, and could finally see clearly after Jesus laid his eyes on the man's eyes again. Jesus wasn't satisfied leaving the man with partially restored sight. Accepting faulty vision as being accurate might have been worse than being able to see at all. It might have left the man thinking his distorted perception was reality, which would have been a more insidious blindness. See, a more insidious blindness, the stuff that it's obvious when we're really messing up. It's obvious when we're addicted. It's obvious when we're running hither and thither. It's obvious when we're, you know, mowing down people, whatever we're doing, or we're running off, or we're accepting our husband's abuse or our wife's abuse or whatever it is. That's pretty obvious. But the thing, what he's saying, what she's saying, and her interpretation is awesome. It might have left the man thinking that his distorted perception was reality, which would have been a more insidious blindness. And sometimes we spend a lifetime, hence a few podcasts ago, the dangers of over piety, confessing way too many times, taking everything on yourself. It must be because I'm not so pure. I'm not so good. Meanwhile, you're suffering at the hands of abuse. You're being betrayed and lied to. Your children are getting to understand that's what marriage is all about, or that's what home is all about, or that's what life is all about. That's what husband and wife are. And as they grow up, they will only repeat the same thing. So sometimes God is saying, no, you've got to see all of it so that you clearly have vision. We're going to finish up with this, and then we are going to interpret your dream, Emily. I am.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You're with me on Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4 Bread, for you can text. And also, you can write DM live at redboxmedia.com any old time you would like to. Get on our website, redboxmedia.podbean.com, and be a friend of the show. You can just get on there, click friend of the show, get Dr. Michelle Live, and there you go. You can also get the app. There's so many cool things, and get previous podcasts by going on to redboxmedia.podbean.com. All right, so we will get to this dream. I'm depending on my cues, Jennifer, so that I get this dream in. But I want to finish this because it's pertinent to Emily's dream. So we're talking about this book Barbara Hosbach wrote called Your Faith Has Made You Well, Jesus Heals in the New Testament. I love this book. And this particular chapter was chapter 16, I think, page 83. It was about the blind man, quoting Matthew, the miracle from Matthew 8:22-26. So before we had to break, we left with the fact that if Jesus would have left this man thinking that these things walking around were trees and not people, he would have had a distorted new vision. So he wanted him to have a pure and clear vision. So then we go on. Once the man saw clearly, Jesus advised him to go to his home without even going to the village. Did Jesus simply want to avoid the hoopla that always followed his miracles? Or did he know it would take time for the man to make sense of the barrage of new images? Now, this is another part I want to put in here because it feels very clear that what she made a point earlier, and I'm going to take that point, she does not make here at this part. He took him away from from the people. She took him away from all those who had always led him around by the hand. He took him away and advised him not to go back to the very people he was dependent upon, now that he was dependent on Jesus for his sight, and now that he had clear vision. In other words, let the dead bury their dead. Don't go back and repeat the places of the past. In present day terms, we know that when someone wants to clear up their life and they really want to follow Christ and they really want to follow a good life and they want to simplify the insides as well as the outsides, oftentimes people who have been harping on them for ages to do that don't like it when it happens, because it's something different and new. Their identity is dependent upon being the person someone else is dependent upon, or being dependent upon someone else. So even though an abused woman, let's say, has forged a life and a family with a certain man, or vice versa, or a kid in a family, has forged their life and their identity with that person, and all what they keep telling themselves, the good is outweighing the bad, or I'm not supposed to do this or that, as things might get worse, once you begin a road, there's a place where your eyes are open. I was blind and now I see. I once was blind and now I see. And you really shouldn't go back. There's so many things that saying you can't go back. And what do we all have the problem with? Going back, not forgiving ourselves, not forgiving others, going back, dwelling, missing, lamenting, regretting. That is our human nature. We all do that. So sometimes, she goes on, sometimes we lose our bearing. We feel lost, Emily. We may be torn among possible alternatives. That's same with Emily in your dream. Okay, at certain turning points, the decisions need to be made, and no one can make those decisions for us. We may long to be led by the hand, but whose hand should we grasp? And Emily, remember in your dream, you were actually calling your husband, I think, to find you, Sam, we're lost, we're lost. Those may be the times that Jesus needs to get us off on our own in order to help us see clearly. He may have to remove the things that usually capture our attention, busy schedules, familiar routines, Emily, or even family and friends, geographic distance, circumstances, or a crisis of faith at 2 a.m. can cut us off from our usual connections. Ironically, it may be the solitude resulting from an illness that brings the opportunity for new growth. We may feel more vulnerable when it's just God with us, and nevertheless, we can be reassured, just as Jesus led the blind man by the hand, we can trust that he is guiding us to clarity. That clarity might come gradually, as it did for the blind man. We may get inklings of the truth, but not be ready to face the whole truth at once. God knows what we can handle. Hence, sometimes the need for things like dreams, running into old friends, thinking of things you hadn't thought of in a while, taking that walk, and then having something hit you. And even if you're in a situation where, let's say, in like Emily, in your dream, let's say when you called your husband, because you didn't really describe what it was you were doing other than alerting him to the fact that that you weren't actually asking for directions. But the fact is, he's a given reliable person in your life. I mean, he's somebody that you would reach out to if you were stuck by the side of the road, most likely. But you're cut off from that in your dream too. You're informing him that you were in the situation, but you weren't necessarily asking him for help. You were being directed in a different way. This is the last segment, so I need to get to your dream. I promised you I would. All right, so let me just finish up here real fast. That clarity might come gradually, as it did for the blind man. We may get inklings of the truth, but not be ready to face the whole truth at once. Now keep that in mind, y'all. God knows what we can handle. Perhaps our vision is limited by self-centeredness. We sometimes view the people in our lives as if they were walking scenery, not individuals with their own needs and wants. They're there to lean on when we're tired of standing on our own, or if we want the benefits of their growth and efforts. God isn't satisfied with that. Once we're able to see that we are taking people for granted, God will help us develop our vision further. If we are willing to look intently at those around us, it will be possible to see them in their humanity. When we consider their needs and triumphs, or joys and sorrows, we'll see that we are just like they are just like us. Our vision will enable us to relate more completely to the world around us. Like the man healed of his blindness, we may need some time to digest the truth about ourselves, our processes, and how best to relate to the people that make up our community. Now, I will also add in there, because of being, you know, we do go to the depths here, that I always find that I have to help people sometimes out of the comfortable zone, the good thoughts, which are that we are like everyone else, because we aren't like everybody else. If you are someone who knowingly harms someone and gets pleasure out of making someone squirm or keeping something behind someone's back or whatever it is, you're not like the person that you're harming, unless that person's the same way. And if you aren't that person and you are being harmed that way, you aren't just like them. That's sometimes the way that abusers use to keep you under their thumb. So, Emily, we've only got 5 minutes. Here we go. I had a strange dream last night, reminding me of your topic about feeling like nobody. Okay, she was walking from somewhere and couldn't find her house. She met up with her daughter and a friend, and they walked all around the neighborhood, couldn't find the house. They used a map, GPS, they were all lost. She reached a building that she recognized as her house from afar, but it turned out church. There were some other twists and turns in her dream, and then she added what those were. But she felt in a sleepy haze, wondering if she ever even found her house and why she couldn't find it. She also said there's lots of townhouses, even though in her own neighborhood there were no townhouses. She added this during our program. She said some creepy lady told her she had a limited amount of time to find her house, but then she kind of quickly forgot about her. She stopped and ate. She finally called her husband and told him the reason that they weren't home yet, because they were lost. They wandered around for at least 3 hours. It was just one neighborhood. All right, so we've only got a couple minutes, and I will remember to take this up on Monday. But I want to let you know, Emily, that is definitely a dream that was spurred by that concept of feeling like nobody. You may not feel like you feel like nobody, but it is that concept of nobody in the middle of nowhere. Your life is undergoing some transitions, most profoundly, I'm guessing anyway. And many of them are coming from different avenues. They seem like they're natural transformations, natural progressions for your kids, for you, for life, for your relationship, for your husband. I'm guessing that you've had some shaking up of your own personal internal hierarchy, how you viewed your marriage, how you viewed life, how you viewed these things. So these are the things that we want to talk about more on Monday for you. And I urge you to think about them and email me more. But just know that your dream is you opening up to a receptivity and understanding, just like we read today about Jesus and the blind man. It is about the fact that you've taken your children and a friend, and you are trying to find your house, where you fit completely, but you don't fit so well. Now, that house from afar, the church, well, obviously, you know, the church is something where you, that is your home, that's your spiritual home, and that's part of your quest. You may not be there yet because you didn't go home in and were part of that place. However, you also did stop to eat. So you had a little bit of understanding that you weren't in a panic, it sounds like. You did inform your husband, which may be something for you to look at, that informing yourself about your marriage and about your situation and where you are now, that you are, for you, totally in a transition period, which in an interesting way sounds good because you only were in one neighborhood. You know it's there somewhere. You know that you have a home. You're taking your children with you, but this little lady said, you know what, you better find it soon, because she said you had limited time for whatever reason. We'll get into more of that. Please write to me over the weekend as well. See if there's any details you come up with over the weekend.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.